All right, sweet. Okay, so we're only 4 minutes behind schedule. So I have like 60 slides and I talk really fast. I'm going to try to talk slower, but, you know, I don't know. Yeah, Robert's sitting in front and Josh is over there, so maybe they'll flag me. So anyway, my name is Selena Deckelman. Work for this company called Endpoint. I'm a Postgres consultant by trade. I also work on user groups for Postgres. We have this website called pugs.postgresql.org. And if in your town or area there's a user group, you can find out about it there. And I also help organize conferences like this one. I didn't organize this particular conference, but I'm organizing one in the Portland, Oregon area in June. So vacuum is something that a lot of people really hate, and they even hate to talk about it. So anyway, I'm doing this as a public service. So what we're going to talk about today, vacuum basics, you know, I'm going to go a little bit at a very high level, talk about MVCC. There are actually several people in this room that know way more about MVCC than I do. So yeah, I guess you can correct my mistakes as I'm making them. But I'm also going to talk about the old free space map, the new free space map, before auto vacuum, after auto vacuum, and a few auto vacuum best practices from config file variables, because there's quite a few configuration options available. So why does everybody hate vacuum? Well, it basically just has to do with I/O. Because you're running a vacuum, it's essentially doing a sequential scan through your rows when it runs, and that can obviously create a lot of I/O. These long-running queries can just be irritating to people for different reasons, vacuum in particular as opposed to auto vacuum. And it is different than a lot of other databases. Other databases might take care of this in the background or have configuration that allows you not to really be concerned with it, or maybe you have a DBA that takes care of it for you. So why do we have it? Well, first of all, it's a normal maintenance operation for what we call dead rows. We can use vacuum full for extreme maintenance, which relieves table bloat, which I'm going to go into a little more later, and also for preventing transaction wraparound, which I'm going to also talk about later. Okay, so here is going to start talking about MVCC. So Postgres has this thing called MVCC, multi-version concurrency control. Basically what it means is that you can have two versions of the same row existing at the same time in the database. It's basically it. So any questions about that? Does everybody get
that? Can you have three?
Yes, you can have three. More than one, sorry.
Why would you want that?
Well, let's talk about that. So Postgres implements it a little bit differently than other databases, say like Oracle or different backends of MySQL. We have what's called pessimistic rollback behavior. So when you have these multiple versions of the same row in your database, Postgres assumes that you're probably going to want to roll it back. That's not always the best assumption to make, but that's the trade-off, the design trade-off that we decided to make. And so when data is being added, when rows are being changed and you have multiple versions in there, they're getting stored in essentially the same file, the same table on your file system. So it's a little bit different than a couple other databases. So I'm going to walk through a very simple example to explain explain at a high level how this works. I'm not really going to go into block level things at all. I'm not going to explain HOT, which is a huge performance improvement that was put into 8.3. But you know, at the end of this, hopefully you'll kind of understand a little more about why we need vacuum. So let's say you have a table, and it has a text field in it that says cats are not very cute. And I'm using the white box around there to indicate the space, basically, that row is taking up. So if I create a transaction where I'm saying I would like to select something from this row and it has the ID number 2, if I then, while that select is still in a transaction, it hasn't completed yet, if I then update that row and say, well, I don't actually agree. Cats are actually pretty cute. In fact, they're adorable. And I add another version of that row there. It's actually, the update is occurring on that that existing row. Sorry, I don't know if this is totally clear. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, good. So I've got that update. That select is still going on. Right now, I have two versions of the exact same row, and this is sort of how it would be stored in the table space. So if my update completes, so that transaction ended, I still have the select out there. So until that first select, which is transaction ID 2, and the update was transaction ID 3, until that number 2 ends, I'm going to have both versions existing at the same time in the database. If I have another transaction that comes along that wants that same row, it's only going to see the second one. Cats are adorable. But until that ID number 2 ends, So another select comes along, it's going to see cats are adorable. It won't see cats are not very cute. But when that ID number 2 ends, then that previous version of that row is no longer visible. So, any questions? Okay. I knew cats would help me explain this. So, let's say after that I want to even go further and say that cats should rule the world, and I issue an update. But then I change my mind, and instead of committing that transaction, I roll back. Then I have this row that was briefly there. It's a row update that was briefly there, but now it's no longer visible. So any future transactions are only going to see the second update that I made, not the third one. So enter vacuum. So at this point, we've got these two rows out there, these versions of rows out there that are no longer needed, and we kind of need to free up that space for something else to use. So vacuum comes through and it cleans up those rows, essentially. And in the end, the space would sort of look like this. We only have one version that's there anymore, and the other two spaces are available to be written to by other processes. So, any questions? Yes, so if you were to look at the file system, the like table file would still be consuming that space, but Postgres internally would be able to reuse that. It's considered free at this point for something else to be written to. Okay, so talking about table bloat, this is an important thing to know about. So bloat is just a measure of how much space dead rows. Essentially, versions of rows are taking up inside of your tables and indexes. Obviously, if you have all of that space, so let's say you have a 50 megabyte file and 25 megabytes of that are really like free space. Obviously, if you have to scan through all that, it's going to take a bit longer than if the file was only 25 megabytes, right? So you want to avoid bloat if you can. Sometimes you can't, but try to do that. And the way that you do it is by vacuuming regularly. Before 8.4, you also had to maintain this thing called the free space map, which I'm going to go into more detail, of course. And you can also monitor this. There's a tool out there called Check Postgres. It's a Perl script, essentially, and there's some command line options. So when you're looking into monitoring this on your database, which generally is a pretty good idea to do, you could use a tool like this. And the reason why I'm pointing out this tool is this is the query that is required to figure it out. You can cut and paste this, actually, from inside the Perl script. It's pretty complicated, actually, to calculate. So anyway, check out the script for that query. Don't start writing it on your own. Yeah, go ahead.
Is it updated for
8.4? Yes. Yeah, it is. So let's say you were not able to avoid bloat. You were vacuuming as much as you could, but you still ended up with it. So how do you fix it? There are basically three ways. One is a vacuum full, which actually locks the table. So you have to be careful about that. You don't want to do that when your site is very busy, obviously, and you are trying to do updates to the tables because it's essentially defragmenting it. You can truncate it, get rid of it. Again, probably not a good idea if you're actually wanting to use that data, or you can drop create it. So if you end up with bloat, you can fix it, but it is a maintenance operation. It doesn't have to be offline, but it is going to have an impact on the performance Yeah, go ahead.
It's also usually quicker to do a cluster instead of a vacuum pool, because that'll rewrite and rebuild your table. Using the cluster command.
Okay.
That will set an order of whatever index you choose and then rewrites the table.
Doesn't it still lock it?
Still lock it. Okay. Quicker than a vacuum pool.
Yeah, that's good. I'll add that to the slide. Thank you. So another thing that vacuum helps with is avoiding transaction wraparound. So there is a transaction number. It can only go up to about 2 billion. And once it reaches that point, your database will essentially stop because it can't ensure that if you haven't been vacuuming anyway, it can't ensure that the next transaction ID won't overwrite another ID. So when you vacuum regularly, it resets that. And now that we have auto-vacuum, auto-vacuum will actually get triggered to help prevent your database from shutting down. But if you're not vacuuming at all and you reach that point, your database will shut down until you vacuum and fix the problem. So just be aware of that. It doesn't happen as often anymore, but if you're using earlier versions of Postgres, which some people, the people are still out there in production running, you know, version 6 or whatever, they do occasionally run into this problem. Yeah, it happens. Okay, so I think I've beat this to death at this point, but maybe not. So vacuum versus vacuum full. In general, you don't need to vacuum full. If you are vacuuming regularly, if you're using auto vacuum, you probably won't need to vacuum full for the most part. Just monitor for bloat, and if you end up in that situation, you know, find a maintenance window and deal with it whatever way works best for you. Okay, so this is going to be just a little historical tour of vacuum functionality. In version 6 up to 7.1, anytime you ran vacuum, it was a vacuum full. So it's essentially that table locking, you know, plus the, you know, defragmentation essentially operation. And it did it every time. That kind of gave Postgres a bit of a bad reputation for performance that unfortunately a lot of people still think this is what vacuum does every time, but it has changed. In version 7.2, Tom Lane implemented the lazy vacuum. I'm sure lots of other people contributed to it, but his name was on the patches. So, and initially they called it lazy vacuum, and I think in some of our documentation it's still called lazy vacuum. But anyway, this is the operation that just marks things as free, essentially, that marks the row versions as free that we no longer need. So let's say you have a version 8.0. Is anybody in here running version 8.0? All right, I'll go through this quick then. So if you're running version 8.0, your your only option is to manually vacuum, and most people schedule this through cron if you're in the Unix world. I don't know, in the Windows world, I'm sure there's a task scheduler or something, right? I mostly use Unix, so I don't really know. It's not very fun to do, I think. There are some parameters that you can set for this. I haven't really messed with these a whole lot. I don't support any 8.0 versions anymore, but you can adjust these if they're helpful. I put the documentation. Since nobody's using this, I'm not really going to go into it too much. I don't see the point. So one thing that people do use is vacuum cost delay. You want to be careful with this, though, because essentially what it's doing is it's inserting sleep in between calls. And you know, if you set it too high initially, your vacuums are going to take days. You know, like somebody told me that a consultant had come in and set this initially to 200 milliseconds without really testing it or anything, and they just kind of let it go, and all of a sudden their vacuums were taking 3 days. So, you know, test that. Test that and start small. You know, maybe start with, like, you know, 10 milliseconds or 20 milliseconds. The reason why you would do this is to slow down the I/O that's happening. So if, say, you're in a situation where you are I/O bound, in your database performance, you could set this, and maybe that would help. I don't know, but yeah, measure the changes. This isn't very important either. Okay, so 8.1. Is anybody in here running 8.1? Ooh, hi. Ooh, Sloaney back there. Hi, Chris. I haven't seen you. Oh, and you too. Okay, so in 8.1, this is the first time that we had auto vacuum available inside the database, and it's turned off by default. But one really cool thing about auto vacuum when it runs is that it won't block DEL, so we're no longer locking things in a way that prevents you from, say, you know, changing a column or, you know, making DDL changes in your database, it actually has a detector and it auto vacuum will cancel itself. So it's kind of a nice feature. In managing this, I honestly don't adjust these that often. The ones that I mainly would touch would be, of course, turning it on. I like to log my auto vacuum. I'm going to go through each of these in more detail, but just saying this up front. And then the scale factors are really the main things that I adjust. And here I think I have the default values for 8.3 and 8.4, but in earlier versions, those scale factors are much higher. So, if you're using 8.1, you're probably going to have to adjust those scale factors down a little bit to get better performance with it so that it's vacuuming enough, essentially. So I turn it on. This log auto vacuum min duration, if you set it to -1, don't log, 0, log all, and you can log anything that takes longer than n seconds. So if you're using something to look at your logs, like, I don't know, if any of you here use something like pgfuin or, a utility like that? No? No heads? Hands? Yeah? Okay, cool. So pgfuin is a tool that will look at your log file and calculate, how long things are taking, look at your selects, your copies, updates, whatever, and then give you a little report and tell you, how long are these queries taking, how often were they run, stuff like that. So, I don't know. I like to use reports like that and then also log my autovacuum so I'm seeing it. So here's some information that you'll get. From that, it'll tell you, mostly what I like to look at is how long it took. And if they're taking too long, generally my solution is to make it run more frequently. Because you're having lots more rows that need to be culled, essentially. So make it run more frequently will make them run faster. So auto vacuum scale factor. So this is how vacuum calculates when it's going to be triggered to run. It takes that base threshold, which shows here. Let's see. Base threshold, so that's right here, 50 on each of these. It adds it to, and then it adds it to the scale factor times the number of tuples in your database. So the way that it figures that out is from pgclass rel tuples, which is a thing that's just gathered by the internal Postgres statistics. So you do have to have statistics on for this to work, and that is a requirement of turning auto vacuum on. But these days, statistics actually don't incur that much overhead. When people measure it, they say it's maybe somewhere between 2 and 3%, which you can get back with some other performance tuning. So it's good to just put the statistics on and use this. But anyway, pgclass rel tuples is something that's automatically updated in the system whenever you have inserts, updates, and deletes. So you end up with this vacuum threshold that'll end up being triggered. I typically have to lower the vacuum scale factor. My numbers that I'm using are often 10% or 5%. These are for 8.3 typically, but I do crank them down quite a bit. There's also a PG auto vacuum table, and you can override what is configured in your PostgreSQL.conf. So like all of these, you probably set these variables in your PostgreSQL.conf. Sorry, I probably should have said that up front. You probably all knew that, but anyway. So you can look at this table as a system table. And one thing that I often do with Sloney, since Sloney does vacuuming on its own on the slaves, is I'll go in and I will turn vacuuming off for those tables. And that can save me some problems later on.
This is going away in 8.4.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it is?
Yes. This table does not exist in 8.4.
What is it now?
It's rel options.
Oh, it's rel options.
So this is the 8.3 way to do it. In 8.4, there's a different, you don't directly manipulate a table. There's an alter table set syntax that you have to deal with.
Oh, the documentation hasn't been updated for that. Okay, cool. Well, I better fix that in my slides. Ha ha. Hi. Yes.
Of auto vacuum and will check PG auto vacuum and save.
Yeah, that would be a great feature. So, yeah, that would be useful. How many people here are using Sloane? Yeah, and you're all, are any of you using version 2? Yeah, so version 1, I mean, that's what everybody uses in production. With that, I turn it off. But apparently not in 8.4. So I'll update my slides for that. Sorry, guys.
I think I care, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the documentation has been updated.
Yeah, I didn't see it in there.
Well, PG Auto Vacuum isn't listed as a system catalog anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. I was thinking of a different page. But one thing about this table, which apparently isn't going to be a problem in 8.4, but that table, PG Auto Vacuum, wasn't backed up. So if you want to save those settings, if you set them per table, this doesn't affect the configuration in PostgreSQL.conf, but if you did make individual table tweaks, you need to dump that table separately. And then I already said my thing about Sloane. Version 1. Not version 2, which apparently is auto vacuum aware. Okay, so now I wanted to talk a little bit about free space map, because this, the free space map and visibility map stuff that was put into 8.4 are kind of a big deal for vacuum. So the old free space map, it was just a shared memory block. It was allocated when the system was started up. It requires a start, stop, and a start. Of the database to adjust the parameters, which is kind of a pain. And the data structure itself was rebuilt every time you ran vacuum and wasn't really written. I think if you do a proper shutdown, it would be written somewhere, but it just sits out there in that shared memory block. So if your database crashed or you were doing point-in-time recovery, the free space map information was not saved. So to adjust this, so this is in versions before 8.4, you have to adjust the max FSM pages or the max FSM relations. And you adjust that based on output from vacuum verbose. And here's an example of vacuum verbose. You'll see right here the free space map contains, you know, this many pages and this many relations. And then it tells you right here what the current limits are. And these would be in your PostgreSQL.conf. And so as you're looking at these, you can just monitor them for how fast they're growing. Yeah, go ahead. It's updated for that table.
Just for that one.
Yeah. So I think this was actually, I did a vacuum across an entire database, just a plain vacuum verbose without specifying a table. Generally, we'll set up graphs that will monitor this type of thing and see what the trend is and then just increase it. I don't know if anybody here has, like, some method to how they decide to set this value. Is anybody here? Yeah?
Well, our software sends a nasty email to the administrator if the FSM is too small.
Yeah, so cron or?
By 1.5 each time.
Okay. 1.5, yeah. Yeah. I've heard 10%, 25%.
So this is one of those parameters, and there are a few others, although not related to vacuum, where the behavior that happens when you cross the threshold defined by the parameter is something that no one ever wants to happen, ever. And there's a couple other parameters that are like this too. But you just keep raising this until it's big enough.
Right.
You never actually want what happens if you go above it.
Yeah, it does kind of suck when it goes above it. But yeah, because I mean, essentially, when it goes above it, your Postgres can't keep track of the free space anymore. It can only keep track of, you know, how many relations
it
can.
So what happens when that?
You just have stuff out there that is not getting reclaimed, essentially. You're bloating. Yeah.
As far as numbers, I usually do, when you set up my current job, I just went double what they wanted. It was running about 15 million. I went ahead, since it's so hard to introduction to data system down, to make it like 30 million. It's only 6 bytes a page, so it's like adding 100, 200 megs to the startup.
Yeah, that's the only penalty for making it large, right, is that you're adding space that's being taken up in memory in this case.
And I have a little trick. If you're vacuuming on the table and you get the warning that you're running out of free space, usually you don't want to vacuum your production system in the middle of the day. So I go like running vacuum template 1, vacuum 10 seconds, and then you get the full output from the vacuum verbose.
Yeah, that's a good trick. Cool. So there isn't like this one best practice for dealing with this. People just increase the value. Sorry. Okay, so in 8.4, it's really great. We have a whole new thing going on. So there's this new thing. They still call it a free space map, for lack of a better name, but it is completely different data structure. Heike Linnekangas was the lead developer on this. There are a few other people that contributed. He actually did a great presentation at FOSDEM. So if you want to see, you know, some in-depth explanation of how it was implemented and how it works internally, you can check out that presentation. It's great. It's pretty short. You can also just ask questions on the mailing list. He'd be happy to answer. But anyway, essentially the new free space map, it's a binary tree structure with some cool like search capabilities and optimizations in it to make it faster. It's stored on disk in 8K pages, and there's no more configuration. That max FSM pages and max FSM relations configuration variables are gone. It just manages it itself. So just briefly to give you an idea of kind of how it works, it generates a binary tree structure like this, and the bottom level, it's a very simplified view of it, but the bottom level is the map of the free pages. And when the system needs to find some pages, it starts at the bottom somewhere and starts searching up until it finds a sufficient number of pages. So in this case, I was looking for 8. When it reaches 8, it climbs back down until it finds the space. And Heike actually went into some details about some cute things that he did in there, and you can find that in his presentation. So once he did that, he also created this other thing called a visibility map. And this is a bitmap of the heap pages, and by default it's set to everything in the visibility map is set to 1, which means all tuples in the page are visible to all transactions. This variable is set during vacuum, so it's set to 1 when you're vacuuming, and then whenever there's an insert, update, or delete, it can be set to 0, meaning that vacuum should look at that page to see whether any blocks can be reclaimed. If for some reason the insert, update, or delete doesn't manage to clear the bit, it's actually not that big of a deal, because the penalty is just that vacuum is now going to view that page. So it's actually really nice the way that this feature was implemented, because if it fails, like if it doesn't work for some reason, the penalty for that isn't that big, and you're not going to have some big system failure or a failure of vacuum just because the visibility map isn't working. So the big deal about this is, with the visibility map, now we can have partial vacuums. So now vacuum is smart enough to know that pages were not touched, they weren't updated, there were no new versions of rows added, so why do I even look at that block? I'm just going to skip right over it and go to some other block that needs my attention. So as far as, you know, all the I/O issues, you know, with doing essentially a sequential scan through your tables to do a vacuum, this is solving a lot of that problem. So this isn't true of everyone, of course, but a lot of the customers that I work with, you know, my own databases that I maintain, a lot of those tables don't change that much, really. And running a vacuum on them, if it has to look at all that information that hasn't changed, is in some ways kind of silly. So for infrequently updated tables, this is a huge, huge win. So I just wanted to run through an example of how you can see how things have changed. So it's very simple. You do a create table, and I use the generate series, which you might have seen in Greg Smith's. I don't know. Do you guys go to Greg Smith's hardware benchmarking talk? Any of you make it in there? Oh man, if you didn't see it, that talk was really good. Unfortunately, we have like recording and stuff. You should totally check that out. But anyway, generate series is cool. So I insert a bunch of rows, and then I delete them. So now I've marked all those updated versions of rows as something that vacuum can be reclaimed. So in the 8.3 version of vacuum, you get output kind of like this. So I'm vacuuming test, and right here you can see that it found 49,999 removable versions in 393 pages. And so that's telling you that it scanned through 393 pages in order to complete the vacuum run. So when I run it again, you can see here, I haven't made any additional changes to the table. So at this point, it's finding zero removable. It's still scanned through 393 pages. So in the version 8.4, the output changed a little bit. Got a little tighter, which is nice to reformatting. I liked. Oops. Okay. So vacuum verbose test. See right here, found zero removable, 8141 non-removal. Oops, did I? Yeah. And it scanned 228 out of 393 pages. So it actually didn't walk through all the pages. That's what that means right there, that number is the key. And it found this many unused item pointers. So it only had to look through those. And then if you run it again, this time, zero non-removable rows, and it only scanned 31 pages. So as far as I/O, you know, you can imagine, like, on much larger tables, this is a big, big difference. So one thing that we don't actually have with this feature, well, I won't go there yet, but one thing that we don't actually have with this feature is a lot of field testing. So Heike has run a few tests, and at FOSDEM he said, you know, that the performance difference was kind of negligible in his tests. So one thing that I'm interested in is for people who have the time to go out and actually test these features and give us some performance information. You know, so if you could just blog about it, whatever, or, you know, send it to me, send it to Heike, and let us know, you know, like, are you seeing a performance improvement from this, and or a regression, which I really doubt. But, you know, give us some information about how it's working for you, because the consensus is among the people who, you know, have to, you know, operate databases like this all the time is that it's going to be a huge improvement. But, you know, we don't have a lot of field data yet to back that up. So one thing that came out of this implementation was, so like I said, the free space map and the visibility map are stored on disk now. So I didn't show the full path, but so when you init DB, you get this directory, maybe it's called data or something like that. And if you've ever looked inside that data directory, you have a bunch of directories there. And one of those directories is base, and that's where all of your table files will be located. And if you descend down into those directories, you can get down to your individual tables. And each table now has what's called, what people are referring to as a fork, but it's a file, you know, that's being written out for each of these. So now when you look in those directories, you're going to see these extra files, and this one's the visibility map, and this one's the free space map. It's not a really big deal, actually, if those go away, because like the old free space map, these do get regenerated if they don't exist or if they become corrupted. The free space map in particular is self-healing as a structure, so if part of it becomes corrupted for some reason, it'll just recreate itself from the bottom. So anyway, so it's not a big deal that those files are there, and, you know, if they get removed for some reason, they'll just get recreated. So just so you know. Yes?
Could you synlink those to another set of disks, by the way, so that the managing of those could be taken off or just move more spindles, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I imagine you could. I don't see why not.
It would be pretty hard because they're going to be constantly. They're not different directories. They're individual files in the same directory.
They are individual files in the same directory. So, I mean, yeah, you'd have to script the creation of them and, you know, maybe base it off of your PG class table or something. But
server won't unlink them or recreate them.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't even try.
I don't think that there's going to be, like, that big of a performance hit. They're very small files, too. Right. I mean, there was actually a long discussion about how to manage these on the hackers list. So, and I didn't read all of it. But in the end, they're pretty small. So, I actually wrote a longer article about this, going into a little bit more detail on things. So you can look at that there. I'm going to post these slides so you can check it out. Yeah.
Do
just saying thank you. A bunch of people helped me with this talk, and Heike in particular for rewriting the free space map and getting rid of two more configuration variables, which is awesome. Yay, fewer gucks. Yeah, so anyway, I think that's it. Anybody have any questions? Yes.
It said, when you ran the vacuum command, it said that there were zero pages that were entirely free. I was surprised by it because you deleted 0 to 4999. Why can't those pages be free? Is it because of the beginning of the database? Or is it that the active tuples between them?
So you're talking about this? Their pages are entirely empty. It probably just has to do with how they were written to the blocks. I mean, that's what it means to me. Just the way that the data was written initially to those blocks, it wasn't able at that point, did it? Yeah. Zero pages, I mean, it's referring to the pages that are the property of that particular table, right? So however they were written, it wasn't able to free any of them because of the way that they were written. So that wasn't a very good explanation. But
the only case where it's going to actually get rid of those pages is if they are actually at the end. So if the pages are near the beginning of the table, well, it's you've got later data, so you would have to actually shift the pages around to clear that out. It is able to detect if the page is right at the end of the table. Great, it can actually shorten up the table for that. Those pages were not in. It may be that the message isn't specific enough. The message maybe should say there weren't any empty pages at the end.
Yeah, that's a good point. We could give that feedback. They've changed a lot of the way, as you can see, it looks a little bit different now. So that's a good point. I'll send that feedback to Heike.
This wouldn't be a new thing, because that indicates that same message is something that I've been occasionally surprised by going back to like 7.4.
That particular message is horrible.
So my interest in this is that, as some of you know, came with Bob last night, I'm interested in solid state drives. And we have this command that you issue for solid state drive that says, this page used to have data in it, we wrote it to you, we will never ask for this page again, you can just ignore it, erase it from the flash, we will never ask for the data on that type of page again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been looking at what an interface for the database that we operate in system like drive would look like. And so I'm curious to know how many pages actually do become entirely empty. And could be got rid of in that way. It doesn't look like we're being told that information right now. But if we could get that information, I'd be really interested to know whether that would be useful and helpful for anyone to be able to do.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a question.
Sure.
You mentioned that the messages have been changing between releases, and this is actually one of the things that's annoyed us because our are there any plans to make some of these statistics available from inside Postgres so you can do a select on some system table to find out how many, you know, what the last vacuum one did?
Does anybody here know?
I don't know if anybody is actively working on this. I know that I, for a while, have been interested in helping some of our clients be sure that the vacuuming that's going on is adequate, that they're vacuuming often enough, they have their parameters set right. Because generally you have this massive query, for instance, that Selena showed that tells you that there's load. And so you tweak some parameters and that load number goes down, and you don't really know why, but you figure it's because you magically tweak the parameters in the right way. You can turn on logging in the background, and you can see auto vacuum just ran, it removed this many tuples and this many pages, and you can kind of trend that, but that involves parsing through the log. So there's been some thought, at least in unofficial channels, of making that something that you can get at from SQL and programmatic. But I don't know.
I mean, it would be, I don't think that anybody would reject that patch out of hand, that's for sure. Yeah. I'm not saying that you have to do it, but...
It might not be necessary with the... You know, seeing as there are no parameters between anymore, it might not really be necessary, but it would be necessary.
For certain performance applications, it sounds like there might be a reason to. It may not be something that gets turned on by default, but it could be something that ends up being related to the logging. You know, mechanism, maybe it's just an additional logging parameter that you can issue for those statistics. And honestly, I don't know that auto vacuum happens enough that it would be like this huge performance overhead just to add it anyway. So yeah. I wrote that question down, so there was another question that I already forgot. Fortunately it's recorded, so maybe I'll get it later. But anyway. Anything else? Kind of went through that quick. Yeah.
The one problem is auto vacuum or vacuum itself, because it blocks the vacuum analyze command. If you want to do analyze on the table, which is vacuum, that you have a problem because the analyze command is blocked by vacuum.
And is that frequently a problem for you?
Yeah, the transactions wait some 3 days.
I wonder. I know that a couple of locks got removed, but I don't know. I don't know if the right one got removed for. Well, I mean, you can't really. Yeah. Okay. I wrote that one down. Anything else? Oh, look at you. You just bought yourself 15 minutes of free time. I think there's still coffee. Oh, yeah, and lunch. Is it lunchtime now?
Yeah.
Yay. Lunch. I think some of us are going for shawarma, so. And I promise not to talk about vacuum unless you really want to. Okay, thank you, everybody.